Welcome back to Living Witnesses as we continue our Lenten journey. The Four Teresas by Gina Lair. We are currently on page 47. We're starting chapter 3, St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, loving God with your whole mind.
For the foolishness of God is wiser than men. 1 Corinthians 1:25. Her life. Edith Stein's life story began on October 12, 1891, in Breslau, Germany, now Wrocław, Poland. Her parents were both devout Jews, though it was her mother, Augusta, who was responsible for Edith's religious formation, as Edith's father died when she was less than 2 years old. Left to care for her seven children and run the family lumber business, Augusta was very busy, but she managed to instill a strong sense of Jewish custom and belief in the Stein household. With this diligent mother as the role model of her youth, Edith grew up to be a hardworking and independent woman. In the Stein family, Edith played a special role, and not just because she was the youngest. She revealed early on, to the joy of her family, that she was an unusually bright girl. Her older brothers and sisters used to enjoy quizzing her in the parlor, asking questions that gave her a chance to show off her knowledge. She loved to win these little games of wit and intellect because she yearned to prove she was the best and the smartest. When occasionally she didn't emerge victorious, she would cry tears of rage. Even as a young girl, she earned the affectionate, if slightly patronizing, title of Edith, the Smart One. Edith so enjoyed learning that at 6 years of age, she begged to enter school, refusing kindergarten as being beneath her. Thus began a virtual love affair with studies and education. Edith almost felt more at home in school than in her own house. When she sat at a desk, it was as if the rest of the world ceased to exist. She was most herself when she was engaged in intellectual pursuits. Edith especially enjoyed the thrill of figuring out difficult problems. Her penetrating creative mind would persevere through a math problem until the truth came to light, and then she would whistle a little song of victory. Such energetic resilience in her studies helped develop the endurance that marked her tireless quest for truth as an adult. Edith spent a large portion of her adolescence working toward academic success. Then, much to the surprise of those who knew her, she left school at the age of 15 to move in with her older sister, Elsa, and help care for her children, giving her formal education an 8-month hiatus. Living with her sister's family was an education of a different sort. It gave Edith a new appreciation for domestic duties, the concrete operations of family life, and human life in general. Edith took such lessons to heart, but soon realized she wanted to return to her academic pursuits. Her educational journey would culminate in a PhD in philosophy, summa cum laude, at the age of 26. But the time away from her studies had a significant impact on Edith's life. During her stay with her sister and brother-in-law, she made a conscious decision to stop praying. She turned from the religion of her childhood and entered into a period of atheism. From the time she was 15 until she turned 21, Edith didn't believe in the existence of a personal God. In spite of this lack of belief, however, Edith stayed consciously devoted to the pursuit of truth. This mission now replaced the unquestioning acceptance of her family's religious heritage. She had a deep longing to understand, in an intellectually satisfying way, the truth about reality and human existence. Many years would pass before she would discover that the truth she was looking for was not in her books, but in the person of Jesus Christ.
The college years. Edith's personal quest led her to study psychology when she first entered college. The science of the mind intrigued her. Through this discipline, she hoped to rationally and scientifically arrive at a clear understanding of the soul as the center of the human person, an interesting goal for an atheist. But her professors at the University of Breslau disillusioned her. They were teaching that the soul did not exist. Edith's sharp intellect did not passively accept whatever she was told, however. While other students might carelessly conform to the ideas of their professors, Edith always thought everything through for herself. Although she was eager to learn, she never allowed that eagerness to impede her ability to think critically. She believed careful, logic, analytical thinking would lead her to the truth. Little did she know at the time that her journey toward the truth of faith would start with a paradox, the paradox of the cross. Much to her relief, Edith soon encountered the writings of a German philosopher named Edmund Husserl. Husserl's thought, which resonated clearly with Edith's critical mind, openly considered the workings of the human soul. Husserl was instrumental in a branch of philosophy called phenomenology, which takes into rational consideration the evidence we gain through both natural and supernatural experience. This greatly appealed to Edith in her search for truth. So she left Breslau to study under Dr. Husserl at the University of Göttingen.
During her time at Göttingen, Edith entered into a thriving community of young intellectuals who would become some of her dearest friends. Many of these classmates were Christian or eventually converted to Christianity. The open-minded approach of phenomenology and the influence of these philosopher friends brought Edith to a new threshold on her personal journey. While she was not yet seeing with the eyes of faith, she was beginning to accept the idea that faith could be a source of knowledge. Her belief that all things had to be rationally and scientifically proven collapsed. And there, standing in front of me, was the world of faith, she later wrote. Edith was still a long way from the complete joy of her conversion, however. During the first year of her stay at Göttingen, she experienced a severe depression. She had read a book about university alcoholism and immorality that disturbed her so deeply that she seemed powerless to restore her former optimism about human existence. She felt extreme loneliness and despair, and she even had suicidal thoughts during this dark time of her life. Edith persevered through this trial. After months of painful struggle, she had an experience that began to restore hope and help her break free of the darkness that had oppressed her. She described the powerful moment that conquered her depression.
I went about as one unbearably burdened, and I was beyond finding enjoyment in anything at all. What cured me of this depression is highly significant. That year, a great Bach festival was given. I only know that Luther's defiant hymn, A Mighty Fortress, was included. When, in stirring battle cry, the verse was sung, and though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us, we will not fear, for truth will triumph through us. My pessimistic outlook vanished completely. A reference to the power of truth brought light to Edith's darkness, darkened mind in the midst of this personal battle. Truth motivated her. Her immersion in academic pursuits and even the period of her questioning atheism sprang from her deep devotion to the truth. This constant, unwavering allegiance to truth would eventually lead Edith to Christianity, the Catholic Church, and the Carmelite Order. As she wrote in her autobiography, my desire for the truth was one sole prayer. Even when she thought she had given up praying, deep down, Edith was still crying out to know the ultimate truth. She would come to believe that anyone who is searching for truth is actually searching for God, whether they acknowledge it or not. I have to say, Gina, this was probably the hardest chapter so far. Reading about Edith Stein, and we got a vocab lesson as well. Yeah, so, right. Who can pronounce phenomenology? Pronounce it, please.
Phenomenology, Veronica. That was your specialty when you were an undergrad, wasn't it? Didn't you do research on phenomenology and Husserl?
I did that whole school kind of. In fact, I guess I could save it. My dad's a philosopher, one of my teachers at Franciscan. And through another student of Husserl's, Dietrich von Hildebrand, is really what opened his eyes to seeing the truth that you can discover through philosophy and through your lived experience, and led him to a deepening conversion to his Catholic faith. And just so many beautiful witnesses coming out of this group of Catholics.
That all sounds just lovely, but you know what? I still don't completely understand what it is, and I'm sure I'm not alone. Could you simplify it for us?
Phenomenology is that this idea that you can come to truth through your lived experience, through the things you're experiencing, you can come to know something of about the world as it is and about truth through your experiences. And not that it's a subjective thing, but that you can come to actually know truth, kind of a reaction against Kant, who would think that you only know things through your lens, like your rose-colored glasses or something, that you can't really get to real knowledge about the world or things in themselves. So this was kind of a return to that idea that you can discover truth and know it.
And I think too, correct me if I'm wrong, Veronica, but there's sort of a sense of openness. There's like a trajectory towards supernatural faith-based truth as being welcomed as a source of knowledge in the phenomenological approach to philosophy, where it's not just pure empirical reason and data and scientific evidence. So that's why I think it was captivating to Edith, if I understand this, was because there's kind of like a synthesis here in this way of approaching knowledge and truth that is a little bit rare, maybe in other philosophical pursuits that feel like they can't allow revelation or faith or even personal experience to be part of it. So
I was in another book study, and we did this the encyclical One Faith and Reason by John Paul II. And as far as I understand, he also was a student of phenomenology. And so, you know, that Faith and Reason is it's just like a genius, you know, reading that and studying it with other people. So, it, you know, that's what he talks about. And it's that reason is so important, and listening to St. Teresa and her background, and it just brings me back to my late husband. That's his study. He had his PhD at 24. He was really brilliant, you know, he was reading Sherlock Holmes before he was 10, you know, he was just like a phenom himself. And, you know, listening to this kind of stuff just reminds me of the kind of things that he was looking at too. Now, philosophy wasn't his thing, but it was communication, which underscores like psychology. So, you know, it's still through like a lived experience, because when you're communicating, learning how to communicate to people, that's what you're doing. So it made me think of that.
Yeah, she's a profound personality to encounter, and so different from the other Teresas. But yet, I mean, I just love the fact that it was actually Teresa of Avila that was responsible for her final moment of conversion. I love those connections between these gals. But yeah, the struggles, like, she isn't one who, like Therese or Teresa of Avila, had these, you know, moments of incredible illness or physical distress, but the mental anguish, the process of, I mean, choosing atheism wasn't like a fun, lazy option for her. It was like a painful movement in the pursuit of truth, and the anguish of what she had to experience in choosing Christianity and Catholicism, to the incredible, you know, pain that caused with her family. There's just such an intensity about what she did, but so motivated by truth and doing what's right. So I think she's an amazing saint for modern times, as we are seeking to find the truth in the right way in just a swirl of so many false proposals about life and about meaning. She's such a beautiful witness and intercessor, I think, for us in this time of incredible mental intellectual confusion that we're living in. So I could say a lot about her, but that's just one of the things that I love about Edith.
Yeah, boy, Jean, I would say that is an understatement.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely. That search for truth. I was thinking just when, you know, when she goes to college and the professor's teaching her that there is no soul, and that she wasn't satisfied with that. You know, you think, how many times do people go off to college and they maybe get a professor who teaches, you know, relativism, skepticism, some kind of, you know, reductionist materialism, and they just, you know, maybe their faith dies there and they don't keep seeking. And just what a witness Edith Stein is, to just keep searching, and that there is truth that can be known, and that you can find it if you, you know, just keep honestly and diligently searching, and not view truth as something reductionistic, that, you know, it's not only what you can learn in the sciences or in philosophy, but that this whole realm of faith is another whole kind of knowing that you can come to.
And once again, you brought up mental health. And bringing out that she struggled not only with depression and again, that topic of suicide. And it obviously inspiring that, you know, while you articulated it well, that, you know, she might have stopped praying in quotes, but really, you know, the depth of the union of God was still there. So God is still working on us right? When even though we may stop, he's still hounding for us. So, and you know, and we're in the third week of Advent, which is when we're recording this. And that candle that's going to be lit or was lit on your third week is the pink candle. And that is rejoice. And I thought of that as you wrote on page 55 with the line that although human wisdom may struggle to comprehend this, the faithful acceptance of God's wisdom makes it possible to rejoice. Rejoice in the love of the crucified Christ. And that's what comes out with her life, is just this journey towards joy in the cross.
There are many statistics that show mental health issues are at an all-time high right now in our society and in our world. Here we have two great saints that we've learned about so far during this retreat that anyone who is struggling with mental health issues can lean on for help and support. They are there for us as part of the Communion of Saints. We are keeping these segments as short as possible so they can fit into your busy schedule, our busy lifestyles. So we are going to take a break for today. We will be back tomorrow reading The Four Teresas by Gina Lair.